For those of you who don't know me, I'm Lisa Smith, the Chief Program Officer here at NJHSA. And this Volunteer Services Professionals Affinity Group is chaired by Anat Paz Way from Winnipeg, JFS Winnipeg, and Belinda Lasky from Alpert JFS in West Palm Beach. And someone, was it Melanie, who wrote an email asking about transportation? And then there was someone wrote an email asking about transportation services. And then there was a huge flurry of emails back and forth. And it became apparent that this might be something that you were interested in. So we decided to do a pop-up and 55 people signed up, which is a large amount of people. We'll see if everyone comes, but that's what the interest was at the moment we sent the invitation out. So hopefully this will be a great discussion. You guys will learn a lot from each other. Belinda and Anat have come up with a fabulous outline. So I guess I will hand it over to Belinda, but please, before we do that, let's put our communities next to our names so we know where everyone's calling in from. That would be great. It's just a right click and take it away, Belinda.
Thank you so much, Lisa. I think Anat and Lisa and I were really excited about the thread of emails that came through about transportation, because it really is such a key piece of what a lot of agencies do. And if your agency doesn't have transportation services provided by volunteers, this is going to be a great opportunity to hear about the different models. So I know Lisa said we're expecting a lot of people. I'm sure the screen's going to continue to fill up. We wanted to really keep this as an open conversation. Anat and I have some sort of prompting questions that we're going to ask, but we'd love to throw it out to the group because many of you are the experts in supervising volunteer transportation programs.
So actually, just before we begin with the questions and while letting more people join us, if you can just raise your hand and see how many of us attending today actually run a program like that. Just let me finish. So the other thing is that if we have anyone in the audience that is here because they want to learn about programs and maybe in the future, I guess, do one of these. And the last one is like, if we have anyone just to, so these are actually going to be the two. So anyone that is running currently a program, if you can just raise your hand so we can see. Looks and like, if just for now, if people can just have cameras on, it's nice to see faces and not just a black screen. So we have, from what I see, there's only two, three,
no. Four, I think I'm seeing like seven five. Or eight people. Dana, Catherine, Avery, Ellen, Anat.
Yeah, so, Sid. And the rest are Holly. Planning on having a program like this? So maybe if you can raise your hand. So we have four, five, six that are, okay. So you're here also not just to share, but also to learn. So it's just good for us to understand how we would like to, I guess, have and lead the conversation. So thank you for that.
Well, I thought I would kick things off. By asking a pretty basic question. And you know, if you have an answer to it, either raise your hand or do it virtually. And we're gonna really wanna hear as many voices as possible. So our first question is, how are your volunteers utilized for transportation services? Can a couple of you give us a sample of like the models that you use and how are your volunteers helping? Let's start with Lori Cinnamon.
Hi. I was late on the call, so I got everything going here. Yeah, so we use volunteers for meal delivery.
Lori, where are you from?
I'm from Silicon Valley. Yeah, okay. I'll change it once I get settled. Sorry about that. Yeah, we use them for meal delivery, pickup delivery. We use them for in our refugee services area. Picking up from the airport, driving clients to early appointments, prior to the pandemic, our friendly visitors were sometimes driving clients to, if needed, to appointments or even to go out to lunch or something. So, and then, so that's it for us.
That's a pretty good range. Sid, I think I just saw your hand.
Yeah. We have a specific transportation program called Kibitz and Ride that's separate. We do have volunteer drivers for Meals on Wheels and food pantry, all that. But specifically, our transportation program provides rides for three purposes, and that's medical appointments, grocery shopping, and hair appointments.
Sid, where are you calling in from?
Oh, sorry. I'm from JFS in Boca Raton, Florida.
As Lisa suggested, it will just make it easier just for us to understand where, if you can just take a moment, maybe we'll pause for a second, change your rename so we will know where you're from. That will help those that later on maybe would like to connect with you, just know what province or states you are, or city you're calling from. Thank you.
And I see a lot of other hands. I'm going to stay in Florida for a moment and call on Donnie Greenblatt.
Hi there. I didn't get a chance to change my my name yet, so I was trying to do that, but I'm glad you called on me. I'm Donnie Greenblatt. I direct the Enhanced Companion Program at Albert Jewish Family Service here in West Palm Beach, Florida. We have a companion program. We're licensed as a homemaker companion program. So per se, we are not a transportation company. But the major function of our companions is to provide assistance with transportation to doctor's appointments, grocery shopping, errands, or just to get out and have some, you know, normal recreational activities like you and I could do. Go out, have a cup of coffee, you know, again with COVID, have a cup of coffee, get a bite to eat, have to go get a donut, a bagel, or something, or just do errands, you know, pick up there. Medicine, go to the library, do something that they would need to get out of the house and accomplish with the use of assistance with transportation. Paid companions or volunteers? Great question, Lanai, am I saying that correctly? So they are paid, they are volunteers. The majority of them are volunteers they get a monthly living allowance, like a monthly stipend. So it's through a federal grant called AmeriCorps, and they have an hour requirement to do. So their service with our clients is they get hours for that, and that goes towards their hours that they are required to get through the AmeriCorps grant, AmeriCorps program. But in addition to getting the hours and the perks that they get through the grant, we give them a monthly living allowance, a monthly stipend per month, and as well as we do reimburse them for mileage. At the IRS rate of, well, maybe it's not now, but the 51 cents a mile for any driving they do for the client or with the client. That's what we have here in West Palm Beach.
Thank you. I know we're going to probably do a deeper dive into some of these programs in a minute, but okay. I want to call on some other people to give us their models. How about Dina from Atlanta?
Sure. Hi. Let me see if I can take my name down later, my hand. So we have a variety of volunteers that drive different things. So we have, like some of the other people who've said, we have volunteer drivers who deliver groceries for our food pantry. We have volunteers who pick up food at like Target or Publix to bring food to us, their excess food. We also have a group of volunteers that deliver meals to our Holocaust survivors on days that they're participating in a special Zoom programming. I don't know how much longer that will continue, but until we can get them all to meet together in a group again, we deliver the meals to them so then they can have lunch for their Zoom programming. We also have companion programs. We have one for older adults called One Good Deed, where we match a volunteer with an isolated but independent older adult, and they may take them out. Again, like some of you said, to run errands, for lunch, to go walk in the park, whatever. We are just starting to get back to our in-person visits that had changed from a in-person to a phone friend, but they're getting back to that. So our drivers will be doing that again. We also provided rides for our seniors in normal times that went to that Cafe Europa that's now virtual. We had volunteers that would pick up our survivors and bring them to the event. We also have paid staff that does do a lot of transportation. We have an actual transportation program that provides rides for our clients, our adult clients who have intellectual and developmental disabilities who cannot drive themselves, and our seniors that need to go to the doctors or a social event or wherever they needed to go. For fee service. We also have a contract with Lyft. We're a concierge for Lyft to do that if we can't provide a driver. But we're considering if we use volunteers in that transportation program as well as our paid drivers. So that's kind of what we do for people driving.
A number of different programs under the transportation umbrella that you have there in Atlanta.
She's busy.
We do a lot of different things. And again, some of those programs are under different service areas, but yeah, they're all involving transportation.
And how many volunteers that will that be? Or I guess some are doing more than one program?
Some are doing more than one program. So we probably have 30 to 40 volunteers that have vetted as drivers for our food pantry and our survivor meals. But again, I'm trying to get more drivers for June 28th, the summer, everybody's gone. So now I'm just reaching out to everybody in our database. We have about 900 volunteers in our database. That doesn't mean they're all active at one time. We had pre-COVID, we had about 80 companion matches for our One Good Deed program. Oh, we also have a Big Brother, Big Sister program. So I guess you could consider those drivers too, because those young professionals are matched with a child and they do drive them. So we do have to vet them as a driver. And that's under volunteer services. But again, yes, a lot of different programs under different service areas. We have about 43 PAL matches for our Big Brother, Big Sister program. Right now we're down to about 60 of the One Good Deed because we lost some during the pandemic. But again, we're hoping to set that up. We had 150 Frone Friends at one point. Mm-hmm.
So I think Belinda and I focus will be more in those that their volunteer role is the driving, not driving as part of their volunteering, which there is a difference. As yes. Being a Big Brother, Big Sister, that's part of your role, but that's not the role. So if we can focus just on those that are using volunteers as drivers, so meal delivery and all of that. So it's, I think it's also a little bit different of the personality of those that are the characteristic that someone will do driving, that someone is looking for that one-on-one connection. So if we can focus, maybe the screening will be the same and we'll talk about it a bit later, but if we can focus today on those that are using drivers as driver and not as part of their other role driving. If that makes sense.
Right. So we had some of those that are delivering food delivery.
Yeah. Okay.
Taking people places. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Tali, I saw you had your hand up too.
Hi. Okay. Hold on. Let me put my hand back down. So we do a lot of what all of you said, but we also, like a few of you, have a transportation specific program called Jet Express. And that's where our volunteers provide transportation to doctor's appointments, the grocery store, and really kind of anywhere an older adult needs to go. We have a few caveats. So we don't drive people to the airport. We don't drive people to casinos. But besides that, at least pre-pandemic, we were driving people kind of everywhere. So we had about 60 to 70 active volunteers at kind of our peak at our, when people were really active and driving. But yeah, happy to answer any of those specific questions, but it's been a great, I mean, it's a challenging opportunity to recruit for, but also it's really that one-on-one relationship that people build. So a lot of our drivers will drive the same person every time, or some volunteers are really able to just kind of pick and choose. And we do have an online system that allows volunteers to go and see what works for them. And so I think they really appreciate the flexibility of that.
So I'll just throw in another question that we'll all benefit from. If you can, Tali, and then those that will talk after Tali, if there are fees that attach to the service from charging the clients and reimbursement for the volunteers, if you can add that, just to give us a bit of a better understanding of the programs.
Sure. So we do charge per ride. Our fees went up prior to COVID. I think it's $5 a one-way ride, because we do offer one-way and round-trip rides. And then I think there's also
very cheap.
It's I mean, it's affordable, and they know that we've background checked. It's a lot. I think we do also partner with Lyft on some programs. We also have a van with it's like more of a guaranteed ride, but those are more expensive. And we do provide mileage reimbursement for our drivers, but a lot of them don't take that. So,
and do you offer instead a tax receipt for those that don't want to have the mileage?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else want to share?
I'll speak to the fees. We charge an annual fee of $50, and that allows each client up to 6 round trip rides per month. Some have it there just in case of an emergency and never use it, but still pay the annual fee, and others use it to the full 6 round trip rides per month.
You said that's annually $50?
Yes.
And how much will be the 7th?
We don't go beyond. We only allow, we have 50 active volunteers, and that's just what we can manage. So we do not go beyond the 6 round trip rides.
That's amazing. And then do you reimburse the drivers?
We do. Most of our drivers choose to not get mileage reimbursement. Out of our 50, on average, we maybe have 5 to 6 per month who submit, and we do the 54 cents a mile. And you know, at the end of each month, they submit how many miles they drove for the month.
And I don't know if maybe I missed, did you share what programs you are providing drivers for?
I did. We are
just that the screen, everything is shuffling. So I just tell you.
Yeah. I can repeat. It's called Kibitz and Ride, and we provide transportation to medical appointments, grocery shopping, and hair appointments. Those are the three
programs. Oh yeah, the hair appointments. That's what's like, oh my God.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. Yeah.
They're in Southern Florida.
Like, it's my screen keep on moving, so it's like I can't really follow. I'm sorry, Sid.
That's okay. No problem.
Anyone else would like to?
I was going to say we also do drawing one volunteer per month. We give a $50 gas card. So if they drove at least once per month, they're put into a drawing. Where they can get a gas card. So that's another
thing.
That's
a nice perk.
Yeah.
It is. That's like actually a nice idea. And
wait, I'm sorry. It's Rebecca from Stamford, Connecticut. I just follow you, Lisa. I do. I just like to follow you, Lisa. And I'm not a volunteer coordinator, but like, this is definitely like hashtag goals, you know, having something like this. And how do you do that drawing? Tell me about that.
For every volunteer who drives at least one client per month, their name goes into a drawing and we randomly pick.
It's brilliant.
It is. And Holly said that she, and I had said welcome back, because we haven't seen our past co-chair of the group since she had a baby. So it's good to see
you.
Mazel tov. So she says car washes are great gift prizes for drivers.
Oh, that too.
How about Avery? We'd like to hear about your program too.
Hey y'all, I'm in Louisville, Kentucky. And we do a similar program for, as a lot of you talked about, for medical appointments and grocery store trips. We cut back on a lot of those drives over the past year, but are slowly starting to incorporate in more like fun activities. We really pared it down to just medical appointments during COVID. But we also have a program that is, to get older adults to do at community events, services, meals at family members' houses that are difficult for them to get to. Up until this point has been mostly hired positions. We've had volunteers do it in the past, and we're kind of looking to move back into that. So appreciate everybody's input.
Thank you for sharing that. I feel like I want to move to the next stage, because I think it's going to touch on what we've been discussing, but also really, really important. And I've heard bits about it. Let's talk about recruitment. Let's talk about vetting and screening your volunteers. We'd love to hear from some of you about how your agencies do this. How about Paula?
And if you also can add, who is paying for all these checks?
Sure. Hi there. yeah, no, nothing new and compelling in the driving area, transportation to medical appointments and grocery shopping and, you know, essential visits. But we vet our, we do a background check on all of our volunteers who come into the program. We're actually in the transition right now because we do a motor vehicle check on all volunteers who are going to drive. We also require them to have their own liability. They also have to have their own insurance, proof of insurance, current insurance. But we'll only allow 25 and over to drive, volunteers who are 25 and over, who have 7 years of driving experience. I can't tell you the background for that decision, but that is our guideline right now is you need to be 25 or over with 7 years of driving experience. They can only drive in their own vehicle, but the way we are funded for friendly visitors through our office, Orange County Office for the Aging in New York. And that is part of our funding for this program, as well as some other donations that we have that support this. So that's how we pay for those background checks. We do pay for the background checks. The volunteers don't. We use Sterling for our volunteer background check, which I'm sure many of you do. And then it goes through the motor vehicle check. If there's anything questionable, it comes up. If they've had something in there, you know, something that comes up as far as like a, you know, fender bender or, you know, an accident or something like that in the past 2 years, it's a discussion about what the circumstances were, because that in New York, we have no fault. So we do have to have a discussion about that before we would blanketly say no or yes to somebody who has a mark on their record.
Excellent. It's always good to hear. I think we're going to hear varying perspectives on that process too.
I think we're interested in hearing varying perspectives as well.
Lori, yes, tell us about your.
Yeah, I have a question because I want to just put this question out there as we're moving forward. We used to not require that people that were driving to deliver food. They were different than people that were in the car with others. And what I wanted to know is, does everybody run all the DMV checking on people, whether if they're doing any kind of delivery, you know, what's the criteria for that? And we're currently using the California site for the DMV, which is like this arcane site, but they do update it. You know, they do run it. So so we get, you know, the DMV continual. So my bigger question is whether you distinguish at all between the two, or if everybody that's going anywhere gets the DMV included with the background check.
Can answer that for our agency right now. We are in the process of changing our vetting process to those who are specifically driving somebody in their car or driving to volunteer, right? So actually driving, you know, like whether or not they're going to be taking somebody in their car is different than if they're driving to and from to do a chore or to, you know, get their groceries and things or deliver food. So it is a different vetting process. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Dina?
Yeah, so we're similar. We do a background check on everyone other than just those one day volunteers who are being supervised by staff. But otherwise we do a background check on everyone. And for those who are driving clients in their car, we also check their motor vehicle record. And we pay for all of that.
And you run it continuously, you know, that they're on a list that gets continually searched. Is that correct as well?
Yes, we do the MVR check. Once they do the background check, we kind of don't necessarily do those again, but we do the MVR check annually.
Okay.
And we do have the same service. We actually are just switching. I put this in the comments. In the chat, we are switching from Sterling to Choice screening, which is a lot cheaper and a lot better service for the exact same product, just so in case some of you are interested in that. But they do, if something comes up within a certain time period of something we've just run, they alert us to that. But we haven't ever had that happen. So
we use Choice where we are also. So I'm glad to hear other people are using it, right, Donnie?
Yeah, and Catherine? Everybody was glowing about them, and Sterling, I can't even get them to respond to things. So
I think I should
let them know that, because I think they're a partner with the network. So
I did let them know that. And
okay.
Yeah, definitely. And there's still our employee part is still using Sterling. So our HR is still using Sterling, but volunteers and another one of our programs called Home Share is now going to be using Choice. So.
So do you guys find it like a headache to keep those insurance, expirations up to date? An administrative headache? I'm just putting that out there since we're talking about this.
Ellen's hand went right up. Maybe Ellen wants to share her thoughts.
Hi, everyone. I have the AgeWell Rides program here in Pittsburgh. And we have rides and visits that go out, and we've been on hold during the pandemic, but except for telephone visits and a few pair-matched volunteers who delivered groceries. And we're going to be starting things back up this summer. So for all of our volunteers, we do the background check, which is free in Pennsylvania. And then the motor vehicle check we do as well. We're going to start to ask volunteers to do that themselves. It's I think a $10 charge, but up until this point, we've been paying for that ourselves for every volunteer who is in the car. And in terms of keeping track of expiration dates, we use a fantastic program called Ride Scheduler. I don't know if anybody here uses it. It's out of California. It's not expensive. It's easy to run. It's a very easy software to get data from. So if my CEO calls me and says, you know, how many rides did we do in the last quarter? Within the space of a minute, I can give him whatever information he needs, and I can produce monthly reports really easily. It also
Cost money? Does Ride Scheduler cost money?
It does. It does cost money, but not a lot of money. And it's actually worth its weight in gold. It keeps all the rides organized. And it also keeps track of all the volunteers' car insurance and driver's license expiration. You could put it in for anything. You build your background of what the information you want on each volunteer, and it flags it whenever something has expired. And you can just push a button and it sends out an automatic email. Hey, volunteers, it's time for you to send me your updated car insurance. And, you know, and then it goes directly to the volunteers and they send it back.
So. Can I add something to what Ellen said? We also have Ride Scheduler. And I would say if anybody's looking to have a program that's more than like serving 10 or 20 clients, like, to have to do this on an Excel spreadsheet and or send out and like doing all that matching, it would be very, very hard. I think using a program like Ride Scheduler really makes it doable. And like she said, worth the weight in gold, because otherwise you have a staff person who's having to coordinate that. And Ride Scheduler is really user-friendly. Volunteers can go and, you know, select what works for them. There's all those reminders and all of that. So, and you can do text message reminders, email reminders. So not trying to sell Ride Scheduler, but there is a really, to make this sustainable, a database like that is really, I think, key.
And Paula, it looks like you wrote that you use Volunteer Hub. Do you want to tell us about that? And then we'd love to hear about other scheduling programs.
Yes, so I am not an expert on Volunteer Hub. However, we do have experts here in our office who are experts in Volunteer Hub. So what ends up happening is that a request will come in for a ride, and then it goes into Volunteer Hub as an opportunity, and then our volunteers sign up, and they basically coordinate themselves and find the rides, so that anywhere from 7 to 10 days prior to the event, they're loaded in best case scenario, sometimes a little less. If a ride hasn't been filled within 3 days of the event, it will get pulled so that we can kind of do a little, one-on-one researching, try to find a volunteer, reach out to those who maybe aren't as active on Volunteer Hub. And then they actually can report right in Volunteer Hub once the ride has been completed. And they can do that in real time. And it's all email. It is all email based right now. I'm not sure about the texting part, but the volunteer will get an email reminding them that they signed up for this event and to call their neighbor to connect with them and remind them that they'll be there. And then they also get a reminder once the event has passed to go in and report on it. So that's that's how the Volunteer Hub works. And it is customizable. It does, it allows you to customize specific areas, because in Orange County, we have multiple areas, like all of you probably do, volunteers who are, going to center in one particular town. And so it does help us to, kind of separate out those towns a little bit. It's not just that you're going to see every ride in Orange County, although you could see every ride in Orange County that's out there, but it gives the volunteer kind of that, it's the independence to do it themselves. It empowers them to choose their rides. It's time management for them because they get the email on the reminder. And we did transition from the spreadsheet model where we had a actual transportation coordinator who was making the calls, sending out the emails and kind of doing it all manually. So it's been a huge help. There's still manual input by the coordinator of the events, but it really has made a huge difference in our productivity.
That is very, very good to hear, using these kind of website tools. I think I see Peggy from Naples.
Hi. I was just wondering on what feedback you're getting once the trip has been completed.
On Volunteer Hub, you mean? Or
you said when they're done with the taking the person out?
Yeah, so because we're funded, like many of you are, we have to report to our funders on the event and how long, what the time frame is. They can put comments in there about their experience, if there were issues, if there was something that they needed to let us know. But mostly it's just to let us know that it happened. And that's the most important part, is that it actually happened.
Do you want to maybe use this as an opportunity for people to share about other feedback you're getting on both sides, maybe to hear, like, what are your clients saying about these rides? What are your volunteers saying? Is it easy to recruit because there's great word on the street that this is a wonderful volunteer opportunity? Maybe let's talk a little bit about the feedback on both sides. Or do you as an agency like provide feedback to your volunteers, like you're doing a great job with driving or things aren't doing so great?
I'll go. So I'm in Minneapolis. And I'll tell you briefly, we have transportation program that is both staff and volunteer run. So it's a combination. I'm impressed by all the numbers, like the 60 and 70 volunteers. We don't see those numbers, but we are able to provide a lot of rides. And as far as feedback, I don't work directly with the clients. There's a transportation supervisor who uses ride scheduler with the volunteer drivers and staff drivers. But what I have heard from the volunteer and the client side is that as far as feedback, people are really pleased with the service. It's that personal touch. It's that friendly Uber service. It's oftentimes people will sign up to drive the same person to their cancer treatment appointment or to the grocery store or to the Jewish community center when it's open. And so it's really building those relationships, and it's that kind of that brief friendly visitor opportunity that people have. So.
And it sounds like also that your clients know that they can rely on Jewish Family Service to provide that kind of service. Any other thoughts about feedback or what you're hearing from your community? Peggy?
Can Can I just ask if, because one of the things we were talking about is, are you requiring the volunteers or the clients to be vaccinated?
Very good question. I bet that's happening in some of our programs that aren't even transportation related, but let's hear some answers.
We are not requiring, I'm Catherine Kowalczyk. I work with Donnie in West Palm Beach at Jewish Family Service and with the AmeriCorps program and Enhanced Companion program. We are not technically requiring that they are vaccinated. However, many have been now and have been open with sharing that with clients, but we do not say that you need to in order to volunteer in the program. Is there anything you want to add?
Right. We have provided them the opportunity to get vaccinated.
Correct.
And give them the choice, but we do not require it.
I would say in BOCA, we are asking both volunteers and clients if they want to share whether or not they've been vaccinated, and if they're okay with us sharing that. So if a volunteer only wants to drive a client who has been vaccinated and vice versa, they have that opportunity.
Did I see Lynn's hand before?
Yeah, you did. You know what? I was going to say that we're in Montreal and we're not, I don't know why it says Chicago.
Yeah.
Montreal. But in any case, we're not at liberty to ask. So a lot of our volunteers are proud to say if they got vaccinated and they're sharing with us, but otherwise we're not allowed to ask. So it's a delicate issue.
Thank you.
Lynn, that was me. It said Cummings Center, but I don't know why I thought it was CJE. So I wrote Chicago by mistake.
No problem, it's okay, thanks.
I think we touched on insurance a little bit, but I was hoping we could have a little bit more of a conversation. What are your agency's policies about, individual volunteers insurance, or does your agency cover the auto insurance when it comes to these rides? So Ellen's hand first.
So we require that all volunteers who are going to be driving clients have active insurance, and we have a copy of it on file. And that's how I know when it expires as well. And we also have JFCS insurance, and we have a rider on that insurance policy that covers any employee. So for example, if one of the social workers goes out to visit a client in their home and has a fender bender, they would be covered the same way if a volunteer had a fender bender, because the volunteer, according to the insurance company, is considered a volunteer employee. And we looked into this when we started the program 8 years ago, and it was not expensive at all to have that added in. I mean, it was like even under $100 or something, very minimal to have that added into the insurance policy. And so what we tell all the volunteers who drive, that their insurance is the first insurance to cover an accident, and then ours will be the second. So what that means is essentially whatever their deductible is, we would end up paying that. And in 8 years, we have never had one cause to ever use it. But it is a question that prospective volunteers have. They want to know because they're using their own car. So it's very nice to tell them that, we figured that all out beforehand and that they're covered.
So Lene is not on the call anymore, but Melanie, you are, from Houston, and she wrote something in the chat. Was it to me or was it to everyone? The way you do insurance is potentially a turnoff to a lot of your potential volunteers. How do you do it?
I don't really know why she said that. I just think we have a very small program of drivers, but it's similar to what Ellen mentioned, that we use the volunteers insurance as the main insurance, the first insurance, and then we have also volunteer insurance as an agency. But I just don't think that we have promoted our program very strongly to gather new volunteers as drivers. So we're just starting to try to revamp it.
Okay. she didn't say a turnoff. She said a big deterrent. That was, I used my language.
Oh, Paula, I think about insurance.
Yeah, I just put into the chat box just the what the verbiage from our forms. This is the actual liability form that we have our volunteers. We provide for our volunteers to let them know, and then they do have to sign a. They do have to sign that form, so there is a signature line on that. But that's what we provide, so they understand that. You know, in that circumstance, that we're going to support them with a personal liability, you know, with personal liability, but their insurance is primary.
Any other thoughts or what you do as far as insurance? All right, I have one other question to kind of throw out to the group. We've sort of talked about recruitment on the volunteer side. I'm curious about the demand or requests from clients. Are your agencies getting a lot of requests and clients say, oh, we need transportation services? Or is it something that's like kind of off to the side maybe and not getting quite a number of requests?
Well, I will share, as Catherine, you know, in West Palm Beach, or maybe Sid knows as well, in Florida, we're not very, I think we're second or third in governmental resources, and the access to transportation, to public transportation is very minimal. And then the access to transportation to those that are aged or disabled is also minimal. I mean, there is a program, but it's not very user friendly. So there is, once one in South Florida loses their ability to drive, their access and ability to get out is a challenge, and there's more chance of them becoming isolated and shut in. So the demand for a program that provides the transportation for them to get out is definitely in high demand here in South Florida.
Thank you, Donnie. That's, I mean, it's good to hear about like the, you know, the government support of that, or maybe lack thereof. And that's why so many older adults are requesting rides. I just saw somebody in the chat said you do 1,000 rides per month. I didn't see who that is, but who said 1,000 rides per month?
Hi, I'm Danielle in Michigan at Yad Ezra.
Oh, hi. Hi, Danielle and Ruth.
This is Ruth. We do not require a uniform, coincidentally. Both showed up in stripes.
I noticed that.
Pardon our bizarre mime outfits today. Anyway, I'm the new executive director here at Yad Ezra, which is a kosher food pantry in Michigan. And during COVID, I was in charge of the logistics, switching our in-person choice shopping pantry to a delivery only model. And we service approximately 1,000 families a month. And we didn't miss a day, but we deliver to 1,000 families every month. So Ruth is our new volunteer and client manager, as she's brought in and I've transitioned to this new role. So that's why we both hopped on the call today. But we anticipate as we go back to allowing clients back into the food pantry to shop, that we will significantly decrease the number of deliveries. Pre-pandemic, we had about 50 deliveries a month to people who were homebound. Our survey of clients showed that many of them still want to continue receiving deliveries. So we have to decide what the criteria will be to whether or not we accommodate that or not. Our Jewish Family Service in Detroit has a big transportation department, and they have professional drivers. So we've used them for about 50% of our deliveries every month, mostly to our Russian-speaking clients and clients in large apartment buildings or senior housing. So we send like bulk deliveries to those places with these JFS drivers. And all the rest we do with volunteers. But I feel silly almost. I mean, we had this emergency situation, and I was in charge of figuring it out. So when someone laughed or sympathized with the idea of doing everything on Excel sheets, hello, that's been us for a year. We use SignUp Genius, and we've had a tremendous, we have very supportive volunteers who used to work in our warehouse. And mostly those are people who became drivers. And then we have a strong relationship with the high schools, with the National Honor Society and colleges. where students get community service requirements taken care of, and we have allowed them to drive. And our vetting has been very individual and personal because most of our drivers have been people that we've known for many years, although we're now looking to see how we're going to vet people moving forward because we realize the whole program will change. So thank you all very much.
Well, welcome to Danielle and Ruth. We're glad you're with us today and going forward.
We expect you all to wear polka dots next time.
There'll be an email in advance of what everybody has to wear. Dina.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, that was interesting that you said that you have high schoolers driving. We have for our survivor meals and then the food pantry, we have a age limit of 21 and above. We can't even do background checks on 16 and 17 year olds, although they do work in the food pantry, but not delivering food. How has that gone with teenagers doing deliveries? How do you vet them? Do you do it any differently than you do for adults?
No, our deliveries are packed and boxed, and drivers sign up in our Sign Up Genius. They pick a location to which they'd like to drive. Like we'll say, you know, Southfield, Michigan, 2 deliveries, Farmington Hills, 3 deliveries. Ruth sets it all up, and then they have to arrive between 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. Sunday through Thursday. The deliveries get loaded in their car because we haven't allowed anyone in our building. At that time, they get their delivery address and client info, so it's not sent electronically and it's not just hanging out there. They go, the food is left at the door of the client, so there is no to very limited personal interaction or contact. And we have a lot of bar mitzvah kids who do it with their parents too, is their mitzvah project, which is a big thing here. But our National Honor Society partners have been terrific volunteers for years. And yeah, that's a pretty developed program with the different heads of the NHS programs in local high schools.
That's a great idea, the National Honor Society, actually.
I love that partnership. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, they're required here to have 15 hours of community service a year. Mm-hmm. So many of them come to us for that, especially during COVID when they had very limited opportunities.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to suggest something if possible. It seems like many are doing similar programs, and we have some people that would like to start these programs. If you have any written material, will it be okay with you to share with all of us? And you can send it to Lisa, and Lisa will send it to all so we can learn, and instead of reinventing the wheel. Are you okay, those that have material? If you will be kind to share, I think we, like what kind of screening you do, if you have a name to the program, I know some.
Your names would be good. We could put it on one list in your affinity group.
Yeah, and then we always, you know, struggle to find new names, and maybe someone has, and we can have kind of a little bit play on words with that.
Okay.
And I know for Canada, I mean, I think there's only what I saw here, one from Montreal, but with the screening, it's a little bit different, but regardless, we can all learn and find ways to improve ourselves. Or different screenings that we all do. Some do adults, some do the kids.
I like that idea. Good to share those resources.
Right, I was saying everyone could put the name of their program in the chat right now, because this has got a good chat that you all may want to look at again, because it shows who's doing what in lots of different ways if you have questions. So all you have to do is go to the resource library and find it under this affinity group.
I see that Vanessa from Atlantic County has her.
So don't put your emails in the chat. Put the names of your programs in the chat, unless people want your emails. I'm sorry.
but also, if you can send it as to Lisa, and she will combine it to other Belinda or myself. Not that I'm making more work for Lisa, but she's good in sending these emails. I think either Lisa or Belinda and myself, and we will just combine everything and send one document that will include all the information that we learned today.
I have a question. This has been very, very informative and helpful. We don't have a program like this yet. And I wanted to know what your procedures were if you had a request for a ride, but not a volunteer available.
Ellen.
You have to unmute yourself.
Yeah, it took a second. I've got an old computer here. Yeah, so we got a grant to partner with something called Traveler's Aid. And I don't know if that exists in Canada, even though I'm a Canadian. I had only heard of it down here. But what happens if we can't find a volunteer, then we can send them in a free Lyft and Uber. But that requires some paperwork up front so that they're registered with Traveler's Aid. And then it's just a free Lyft and Uber for them. And that has been a godsend because that picked up all the slack. We used to have to sometimes call people and say 2 days before their appointment, we don't have a volunteer for you. It wasn't very often that we did it, but we hated to do it. And then they had to always, before they would enroll in our program, they had to know that it wasn't a 100% guarantee that we could get a ride for them and that they may have to have their own backup plan. Here in Pittsburgh, we have something called Access Transportation, which is a branch of the public transportation system. And we required all of our seniors to be enrolled in that as well, so that in the event we couldn't get a volunteer, they still had time to request an access ride.
So I think, Ellen, that's a good point. And I always say that this is not a guarantee service. We will do our very best to find a ride, and we will let them know as soon as we have an answer, either yes or no. And this is how you give them enough time to find alternatives. But there are different taxi vouchers and different grants that I'm sure we can all apply, but that takes also lots of coordination. So Vanessa, best of luck with starting the new program. And I do hope that today you learned a lot. I definitely heard new things, and it's always nice to be reminded of new ideas and how to better our programs. So again, if you all be willing to share some of the resources you have, then we will be able to send out a document that definitely for Vanessa and others that are trying to gonna start new programs, she will have kind of a mini manual how to. Yes, so I think we have, sorry?
Much appreciated.
We have about 5 minutes left for our session today. And
go ahead.
Go
ahead.
And this was a pop-up session, and I'm kind of overwhelmed with the number of people that found this interest. And Belinda and myself are willing to have more pop-up sessions that are just on a specific topic. So if you have any ideas of things you would like us to have a conversation, I think we all like really learn from each other. If you can send it later to Belinda or myself, and we will see if there is an interest to this volume again, and we will be able to call a pop-up session. As you can see, we had very little on our agenda, and you are the expert. Each one of you that is carrying a program, you know where the strengths, you know where the weakness, where the things you want to improve, what challenges you're facing, and we can all help each other. So this is the whole purpose of these kind of meetings. Sorry, Belinda.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was looking for Melanie because I think, right, wasn't this Melanie's topic that we had thought that Melanie had sent the initial email that she was interested in transportation. So I was just looking on the screen because I wanted to see if this resonated with her, if it helped answer her some questions, but I don't think I see her, but we'll check in with her. Hopefully she found it as useful as we did. And I hope you all did as well.
Okay. I jump in and ask with a few more minutes. There was a few really good questions around like safety trainings. Kind of curious if anyone does safety trainings, I think Avery asked, or any like older adult sensitivity trainings. It's a lot of the people we're transporting are older adults. And then if anyone has like an upper age limit for drivers. So I don't know if we could, put that out there for another minute, because I think those might be relevant to a lot of people.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Tali. I'm looking to develop trainings for all of those things. So if I don't have to start from total ground zero, that would be awesome.
Send it to me and I'll put it in the resource library. Really, that would be great for all of you. And what about upper limits? Does anyone cut people off at a certain age?
That's a tough one.
It's a tough one. We have a very rigid HR department, and you're right, we're not allowed to really do that or ask their age, or it is a tough one.
So I guess agencies without HR departments don't have to worry about it.
I had one lady who wanted to be a driver and she was 90. She looked gorgeous though. She was really well put together, but I was quite cautious. So she was one of the few people I said, okay, well, just as part of our training program, I'd like you to take me out for a ride and we'll just see. And you know what? It was a little scary. And so, I dithered all night. What do I do? Do I say to this lady, no, you didn't pass. I don't think it's safe. But I was saved by the bell because she called me in the morning and said, I've been rethinking things and I think maybe driving is not quite right for me. So, but she was 90 and wanted to try initially. But you cannot.
This is brilliant.
I like that idea. I thought that's a good idea though, to go out and see, and they probably get the idea that you may be a little hesitant, even though you didn't say it yet. That makes sense. Last one, and we really
super
only
super sensitive and smart.
Does anyone have a geographic radius for their rides? Everyone, people do shake their heads. Yes, no, yeah, everyone. Probably
we don't.
Who does?
But it's a city. Winnipeg has its own like kind of limits of to the city. So,
but that's a geographic boundary, the city.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay, so I'm the one who has to get off the Zoom because someone needs to use the Zoom next at 3 o'clock. So I want to thank Anand and Belinda and all of you for coming at this pop-up, and especially the two of them who really, you know, wanted to bring this to fruition. So thank you both. You want to say when the next meeting is, one of you two? Do you remember?
Thank you. I think it is August 17th, but I could be wrong.
I have the 18th. I could be wrong. Which is right? Let's look. Don't leave us in this last minute. We're going to find it. So we want to make sure you guys know so you can mark it in your calendars. And it is on the 18th at 1:30. That's a Wednesday.
I guess I'll just be there a day early, Lisa.
Terrific.
And I may not be, if everything goes well, I'm going to be in Israel. Best of luck with Corona and all the challenges.
Have a great summer, everyone.
Yeah.
And thanks, good, everybody.
You know,
thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.